money and the world have been swirling. A lot of uncertainty, a lot of volatility. Brian Jacobson with us, the Annex Wealth Management Chief Economist. Brian, happy Friday. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it is my pleasure.
Hey, a tough week for the markets, although they did bounce back this afternoon, which was really nice, especially the Dow the last hour kind of climbed back big time. What is it that concerned the markets so much this week?
Yeah, this past week, I think it's the how long the government shutdown has lasted. You know, initially that if it was going to be, you know, maybe a couple weeks, the economy can kind of deal with that. But the longer that it goes, you suddenly get these flight delays, the cancellations. You have lack of regulatory approval for businesses on a number of things. And so it's just almost like it can snowball. And that was part of it. But then we also have earnings season going on. We're at the tail end of earnings season for the 500 companies and the S&P 500. What they've announced so far has actually been better than expected. It's just this past week, there was a little bit of disappointment with perhaps some companies in the tech sector where there are very high hopes, high expectations, and they gave good numbers, but not quite where people were hoping. It's almost like an A-plus student who comes home with an A. They might feel a little miserable.
Good analogy.
That is such a good analogy. Okay, so forecasting is really important, and there's government agencies that do that. Are there any government agencies that are still affected with the government shutdown that can really do metrics and they can't give it to us because the shutdown is still going?
That's an excellent question. The biggest source of data from the government right now that is still going on would be from the U.S. Treasury. So we can see as far as the daily accounts, as far as how much debt we're accumulating, but also where money is coming in, where it's going out. But then also the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, it funds itself. And so they have released information. Like today, they released their financial stability report. It's this big collection of information about how stable is the financial system, and nothing was really all that worrying there. They also do release things like industrial production. They have their various regional surveys. And so we still do get some information from the federal government, but the past week, most of the data we were really focused on were from private sector sources, especially ADP, Advanced Data Processing. So they process the payrolls for about 20% of the private sector, and their number for the private sector jobs that were created in the month of October was actually better than expected. It was positive 42,000, which is significantly better than what we had for August and September, where you actually saw declines. So right now, we're focusing a little bit more on the private sector data and earnings season as opposed to the government-provided data.
Chief Economist Brian Jacobson is with us. Wanted to ask you a question about tariffs. Brian, you and I have spoken a lot about tariffs, including in some of those really cool webinars that you guys put together. If the Supreme Court rules against tariffs, and there are signs that they might, what kind of economic pain could that produce?
It'll be interesting because I think there's a little bit of misunderstanding about what might happen. You know, if the Supreme Court says that these tariffs were collected illegally, right? So if it, President Trump exceeded his authority under the International Economic Powers Act, which is what's at stake here, that accounts for about 70% of the tariffs that have been collected. It's around $100 billion, which is nothing to sneeze at, but it is a relatively small amount compared to the overall budget of the government and then also the overall size of the economy. Now, what is likely to happen then are the importers, the companies that paid the tariffs, if they had protested the tariffs when they were paying them, they would most likely be entitled to refunds. And so they could actually get a little bit of quote unquote windfall if the tariffs are struck down. But the thing is, President Trump is likely to pivot to other much more tried and true ways of imposing tariffs. Likely, we'd see a 15% tariff kind of across the board for about 50 days while he works on country-specific tariffs and then what are called sector-specific tariffs. So it's just that it was this broad brush, kind of this Oprah Winfrey approach, like you get a tariff, you get a tariff. That type of approach is what's really being heard in front of the Supreme Court.
So what's really interesting about tariffs and the government shutdown are the farmers that I just spoke to. Doug Rebout out of Janesville with Rebout Farms, and he's the head of the soybean farm. Farmers Association of Wisconsin. He's waiting on the $12 billion to make themselves whole, but they can't get any of that money because of the shutdown. What does that also do for other loans besides farmers in general? Because I saw that it was kind of not volatile, I shouldn't say that, but it went down 1% on the day this week, and then it was down just a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, in terms of with crop prices, we are finding a little bit more stability. It's oftentimes very much driven by weather-related events. Now, obviously, the soybean producers in the United States were probably a little happy that China finally has agreed to make a rather large purchase of soybeans, but that was after purchasing nothing for like 6 months, because after the first Trump administration, they had pivoted to purchasing soybeans mostly from countries like Brazil. But now, as part of the agreement that was struck between President Trump and President Xi in China to bring down the U.S. tariff on Chinese goods from 57% to 47%, China agreed that they were going to start buying more soybeans. We're going to have to see, do they follow through with this? Because remember, in 2020, there was like this agreement between the U.S. And China didn't live up to that agreement. And so I don't know. I'm a little skeptical as to how long lasting this agreement will be.
Chief Economist Brian Jacobson, Annex Wealth Management, with us on the hotline. We've talked a lot about airlines this week and what's been going on with the airlines and our airports. How have airline stocks fared the past couple of days, Brian?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's been really interesting because with the cancellations, a lot of that cost does fall on the airlines. And so if you think about some of the big ones, like let's say with American Airlines, when we take a look at how their price has behaved just over this past week, it's actually up a little bit, which might be somewhat counterintuitive, but that's because it's actually down significantly from where it was back in January. I think people were expecting that we would see some flight disruptions and cancellations. Let's hope that it stays rather contained as it is now, the, you know, up to 10%. There's talk about it going to about 20% of flights. So the bigger that those cancellations get, the more likely it is it's going to take that financial toll on the airlines, but also the emotional toll on the travelers. I mean, think about just the opportunity cost, the time that's wasted at the airport with all the delays and cancellations. Now, the reason why maybe the market started to bounce back towards the end of the day here, it does look like they could be coming to an agreement to actually open up the government. Probably not as early as tomorrow, but maybe let's hope by Tuesday they can come to some sort of agreement to end the shutdown, in which case we wouldn't have to see these further cancellations at all the airports.
There's a quote by Richard Branson, who used to have Virgin Airlines, and he says, if you want to be a millionaire, start with $1 billion to launch a new airline. So this makes me think about 9/11, different times where it's been really difficult for the airline industry. Do you think that they may need to be made whole or some things may change?
Honestly, things have changed so much for airlines. If you think about the deregulation of the airline industry that started under President Carter, all of the challenges that they were facing as far as transitioning to a different, almost complete operating system from being a luxury form of travel to being a little bit more budget-friendly, different airlines competing where it's the direct flights as opposed to the traditional hub and spoke. So the industry has transformed over the years, and it does seem as though they are much more efficiently run. It's one of those where it's still very high cost. Look at the price of the planes themselves, the cost of having the access to the gates, the fuels, they have labor issues. So it does look like, though, a lot of the airlines are able to manage this. Although, keep in mind, just in Milwaukee here, it was announced about with Spirit Airlines that they're going to be stopping service, but they've had their own troubles because perhaps they went a little bit too low cost for what travelers were really willing to stomach.
Annex Wealth Management Chief Economist Brian Jacobson. Brian, have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
It is 4:56 at WTMJ.